Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber, your host. On today's show, software-defined networking. The way we use the internet is changing, and the way we manage internet traffic must change with it. Joining me to discuss this is Evelyn Smith, a research associate at the American Enterprise Institute. Evelyn, thanks for joining the show again.
Thanks for having me back.
So before we get into exactly what software-defined networking is, briefly summarize the radical changes in internet usage that we've seen since its inception.
Yeah, so it's really important to have some context for how these habits have changed. I mean, if you go back to the early 2000s, YouTube wasn't a thing or was barely a thing. Spotify wasn't out yet. Netflix was still a DVD by mail service. Practically no one had iPhones. The iPhone wasn't even out yet. It didn't come out till 2007. And so no one had like smartphones as we think of smartphones today. So in terms of how we spent our time online, it was mostly static web surfing, lots of MySpace, lots of AIM. I know I myself spent a lot of time chatting awkwardly with my crushes on AIM for most of the early 2000s. So there wasn't a lot of video traffic, not a lot of voice. And most of our experience of the internet was usually attached to like a desktop computer or a laptop. And so what that means for network engineers is that they had a relatively easy time in terms of managing the traffic that passed across their networks. The demands on their networks were relatively simple. They were relatively consistent. The devices they had to configure to work with the network were smaller in number, and the volume and complexity of the data that they had to contend with was relatively minimal. And of course, moving to today, that's changed. You know, as I said earlier, the first iPhone came out in 2007, then competitors to the iPhone. Today, we like 2/3 of Americans have smartphones, according to Pew, and we're seeing new patterns of use on the internet. Streaming video, streaming music, people are doing that almost constantly from devices that are attached to their hips. And AT&T from 2008 to 2015 actually saw a 100,000% increase in the traffic that was passing over their networks. 100,000%. That's crazy. And on the horizon, we have the Internet of Things, tons of chatty devices, some of which we also will be carrying with us. All those devices are coming onto the network. We're going to see new configuration languages, real-time software updates. And basically what this means for network operators is that their life is going to become a living nightmare. I mean, it's just so much that they have to contend with.
Yeah, and there's really, as you say, such a change in how we use it. And whereas most of our activities in the past were bursty, mm-hmm. and we've talked about how something like visiting a website is so different than something like streaming video.
Yeah.
Because visiting a website, that's static. You click on the website, and for a brief moment, it needs to load the site. But then if your internet cut out, that text would still be on your page.
Right.
Because it's a burst. It's a little, every time I click a link on Wikipedia, tiny little burst of internet traffic, then it stops. Whereas streaming Netflix or especially live video, like sports, is extremely strenuous. If there's even the slightest interruption in the stream, people go nuts because that's the term you hear, lag, you know, if you're an online video gamer. And that's obviously very different than something that is bursty or little messages like Facebook Messenger or AIM as the predecessor. That was not as strenuous.
No.
So clearly the demands on the network have grown exponentially, and people just take for granted that their internet has worked from 1996 to 2016 as if that hasn't been kind of incredible, that it continues to work so well for most cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at the composition of internet traffic today in the U.S., at peak times, well over half of that is just video, and well over half of that is just Netflix. So, things are really changing very quickly.
So now let's get into the topic of today, which is software-defined networking.
Fun term.
You have a Medium post up that's attempting to explain this in kind of a way that a layperson can understand, and that's what we'll do on today's podcast. So take it away. What is SDN?
Okay, so I'm going to use the same analogy that I used in that blog post. So picture in your head a system of roads in a city like DC, and the system of roads is going to be our network. And the traffic that comes over these roads, the cars, buses, pedestrians, bikers, these are, our packets of data. And so, you know, the traffic on the road, these cars, these buses, bikers, they have a complex and diverse set of things that they need the roads to do for them at different times during the day. So you can think of an ambulance. Obviously, an ambulance needs to get where it's going as quickly and reliably as possible. Commuters are probably in a bigger rush at 9 a.m. on a Monday than they are at noon on a Sunday, assuming they're not going to brunch. Bikers are totally unpredictable and don't follow any rules. Sorry, Baron. pockets are kind of like this. You know, they're very diverse. As you mentioned earlier, you have static web traffic, which is very different from video traffic. Video traffic's kind of like an ambulance. It needs to get where it's going really reliably, as quickly as possible. It's very sensitive to delay. This is different from IoT traffic. Internet of Things devices generate a high volume of traffic, but it's not necessarily as time sensitive as video traffic. So you have a very diverse set of packets that are traveling over your network, just as you have a diverse set of commuters that travel over your roads.
Wait, you're suggesting that my internet connected coffee maker, that's not important that I have that traffic?
I mean, maybe it is to you. I don't know if you really need an internet connected coffee maker.
It could be life or death.
It's hard to imagine a situation which that would be the case, but you do you. So going back to our traffic, city traffic example, imagine that you have the job of a traffic planner, and it's your job to try to get everyone where they're going as quickly and reliably as possible. So you're kind of like a network operator managing traffic on their network. And just imagine that you're trying to solve a specific problem. Say you're looking at 14th and U, which is a really busy intersection in DC, and you're trying to ease bottleneck at this intersection during rush hour. Well, let's look at what your options are. You can try maybe changing the timing of the stoplights at that intersection so it better maps to when cars are actually coming into the intersection. Maybe that would work. It probably wouldn't make much of a difference. You can also think of building out more lanes so that more cars can fit on the road. Maybe that might ease gridlock, but you know, that's really capital intensive and it's time intensive. And in the meantime, you're going to get even more traffic and gridlock.
Right, so during the construction period, it would be a nightmare.
Oh, it would be an absolute nightmare. So I mean, the gist of it is that you can't really respond in real time to something like a major accident or, you know, say the metro bursts into flames, which it seems increasingly likely to do in the coming weeks.
Seems to happen all the time.
Seems to happen all the time, yes. So you can't respond in real time given the physical constraints that you have. And this is something that, you know, before software-defined networking, this is something that network operators had to face as well. You know, they have hardware in their network, their switches, their routers, their servers, which are typically purchased and fabricated from a vendor and built to serve a very specific tailored purpose. And if you wanted to change something about that device, change something about your network so that it does something different, you'd have to solicit a new piece of hardware from a vendor. And that takes weeks, that takes time, that takes money. Big changes take even more time and more money. And the whole system really at the heart of it is just not flexible, and it can't respond in real time to bursts of traffic, or you can't really tailor your network to handle specific events.
So it's like hardware-defined networking. This is where if we want to make improvements or change the way it works, we need to basically change the infrastructure itself.
Yeah.
Whereas software-defined networking does not involve that. That involves things that you can just do at the software level.
Right. So let's get into what software-defined networking actually is finally. So imagine, go back to our traffic planner example, imagine that you had this magic wand and you could use that wand to repurpose and move roads around and, you know, repurpose them in real time so they're doing exactly what you want. So for example, you could take an unused lane from a road that's not really busy and move it over to 14th and U so that you immediately have an extra lane for cars to move down. Or you could take an empty road and turn it into a bridge over the Potomac so that commuters from Virginia have an extra way of getting downtown. Or you could clear a path from an ambulance to a hospital. You know, functionally, what software-defined networking is in the context of this roads example is we're reprogramming our roads to perform functions you need right now to respond to real-time needs. So in terms of network infrastructure, you're taking your hardware, your switches and your routers, and you're turning them, you're white boxing them is the term. So you're taking these pieces of hardware and you're making them agnostic to the purpose that they're meant to perform. You're reprogramming them to fill specific immediate needs using software. And more broadly, you're centralizing the software and using it to treat your entire network as this cohesive fabric that you can reprogram and repurpose in real time to meet the demands that are being placed on your network. So it's huge. It's really, really cool.
And the real world analogy, I guess, would be something like changing the timing of traffic lights for a particular hour. So whereas right now, if city planners decide that there's problems on 14th and U because of bottlenecking, correct me if I'm wrong, if they make changes to that traffic light, those changes are going to be there for the foreseeable future too. They can't just say, okay, from 12 to 2 p.m., it'll be a different timing than from 4 to 6 PM or things like that. They can't get that smart with it. They can only make changes that are kind of permanent in nature.
I would say it's even bigger than that. It's like taking a traffic light and making a traffic light do something it's never done before. I mean, I'm having a failure of imagination here, but it's closer to what I said, like taking a road and moving it somewhere else in real time so that it's serving, meeting demand where it needs to meet demand and not just laying unused somewhere else.
So you've kind of gotten into the benefits of it where you can deal with higher volumes of traffic. Give some examples of how software-defined networking is being used now. Who's adopting it? Are we seeing the major companies using it? What's the state of play?
Right. So, in terms of what SDN is bringing to the fore, we have huge benefits in terms of efficiency. So for example, Google has been using software-defined networking for well over a decade. And it boasts that it increased the capacity of one of its data centers by more than two orders of magnitude using software-defined networking, among some other things. It's also boasted that software-defined networking will allow it to reach a 100% network utilization rate, which is compared to a 30 to 40% industry average. And they can scale this efficiency with relative ease because it's software. You know, you can push software far more easily than you can move hardware around or make new hardware. Another big benefit is cybersecurity. So I was listening to the Andreessen Horowitz podcast a few months ago, and they had Martin Casado on, and he was talking about how you can use software-defined networking to bring basic cybersecurity principles and put them in places in your network where they've never been before. So in cybersecurity, there's this principle called least privilege. And it's essentially that you want to give users access only to what they need to do their job and nothing more. And so you can use software-defined networking to move this principle of least privilege, which you've given to users, and actually apply it to your servers so that physical servers in your network are only talking to other physical servers that they need to talk to at a given time to get their job done and nothing more. And so it's taking cybersecurity, which is typically at the border of your data center, and moving it right into your data center, so it's intrinsic to the hardware. And that's a huge advancement. And furthermore, software-defined networking gives you a lot more visibility over your network. So you can more easily notice patterns and threats against your network. You can better contain and mitigate attacks when they happen and damage from an attack. And it's really, really important to firms who are handling massive amounts of really sensitive data, health data, banking data, you can only imagine. And again, you can scale the security with relative ease.
And this could really reduce the scope of a cyber attack.
Yeah.
So the way I'm trying to conceptualize this, and of course I'm not an engineer, but I'm thinking you successfully hack into a network, and in theory, you now have access to kind of the whole enchilada.
Right.
Everything that's on that server, all of it is vulnerable. But in a software-defined world where that server is only communicating for very specific, discrete needs, and it's not a wide-open situation, you could see a hacker get into a network, get really excited, only to find out that they have a tiny amount of information available to be taken away,
right,
or that the network is so smart that it detects the attack and shuts off the other lanes, and it would almost be like there's an accident on the road and you just disappear. You make the accident disappear. It's gone. It's just like a bulldozer came in and swept away the wreckage and the whole highway is now moving again perfectly fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's something like that. I know network engineers are very sensitive about analogies, so hopefully we're mapping with some degree of fidelity to what is actually happening here. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that. You can really contain things with a lot more ease than you could using traditional methods. So you had asked earlier who's using software-defined networking, and it's really not everywhere yet. A lot of big companies like Google and Amazon, Microsoft, AT&T, who are grappling with overwhelming volumes of data and demands on their network, and who have often built their own massive data centers and networks of data centers, software-defined networking offers enormous benefits to them, which is probably why they've adopted it and have been using it for the past several years. But there are some barriers to adoption, and one of them, so AT&T's chief strategy officer, John Donovan, came to AEI last week to talk about how his company has been transitioning to software-defined networking. And one of the costs that AT&T has encountered is that they have to reskill their workforce to contend with what software-defined networking is. So, for example, you have technicians on the ground and customer care representatives who are working with totally new problems that they've never encountered before. And so they have to be reskilled to know, okay, this is what the problem is. This is how I fix it. This is how I explain it to the customer. And also you need this army of software developers to kind of build your network out. So that's, for smaller companies, it can be, I can see that being a barrier to adoption if you can't afford to reskill your entire staff to grapple with this new technology.
Of course. As with any technology, there's going to be a lot of retraining. There's going to be a lot of restructuring of the industry. And as you say, whereas most of the network or most of it was hardware based in the past, where you needed people to go physically to a location and make an upgrade or make a change, now you're going to have far fewer people interacting with the infrastructure, maybe because it will be happening behind the scenes. And when customers call to complain about poor service, they might not be getting a technician come to their house or their block. It might just be happening at the network level.
Right. Yeah. It's a different interface for consumers as well. So it's, things are changing.
Now, of course, this raises a lot of policy issues. And one of the things we've talked about on this podcast ad nauseum is net neutrality.
Yes.
And in its most, in its strict form, it's basically that all internet traffic must be treated equally. All bits are equal. So, you know, whether you're clicking on Wikipedia links, which I've said is a bursty activity, or you're doing online video gaming, which is not bursty, which is requires sustained connection, that should be treated the same, because it's almost like a religious principle about the way the internet should be in some people's minds.
Actually, I hope that's not the definition the FCC is using, because I think, like, even Tim Wu was like, yeah, video packets are different from like static web traffic. We shouldn't treat them.
Yeah, well,
we already treat them differently.
One of the problems is that, you know, the FCC might try to be reasonable and take some of net neutrality and leave the rest. But you see in countries around the world where the most extreme interpretation has reigned supreme, like in India. But when you think about all bits are equal, that doesn't really comport with software-defined networking. And you've just talked about how it requires a smart network that notices difference, that notices changes and adapts. So is there a place for software-defined networking in a net neutrality world?
I mean, the way I see it is that, you know, net neutrality at its core is a set of really old legacy rules that were built for a really old legacy telephone network, and they're not really reflective of what our networks look like today. They're not forward-looking in terms of the problems that network operators and app developers and end users are going to face in the years ahead. And the bottom line is that to the extent that net neutrality is hampering our ability to be flexible, to experiment with new solutions, and to the extent that, you know, network companies and applications have to worry about whether a regulator is going to come after you on the basis of some abstract principle that doesn't really map to what you're, the problems you're trying to solve, I think that's really bad. And obviously, like, we need to make sure that our networks work and that they are secure and that they are useful. That takes flexibility, that takes degrees of freedom that I don't think net neutrality affords, at least how it's been interpreted by the FCC in their 2015 Open Internet Order.
And of course, we are adopting a strict form of net neutrality that took effect in June of 2015. Just as you're coming on my show to talk about a major change in networking, it seems like the timing couldn't be worse. I mean, if we had kind of the hardware-defined network for the last 20 years, and now we're seeing a shift towards software-defined networking, like we talk about on the podcast all the time, regulators are fighting the last battle. It took them 20 years to put in place a net neutrality regime. Meanwhile, the rest of the world is moving on. Companies are moving on. They're being eclipsed by the market. And they get this regime in place and it's completely ignorant to software-defined networking. And I wouldn't even be surprised if the Open Internet Order doesn't even mention the term software-defined networking in the regulations, or if that even came up at the hearings or at the deliberations among commissioners, because government is a lot slower than innovation.
And I mean, I haven't memorized all the words of the Open Internet Order because there are a lot of them. I don't know if...
Only 330 pages. Very simple regulation.
Yeah, light Sunday reading. I don't know if they bring it up. I haven't heard the FCC talking about this at all. Like, I kind of hope they just don't pay attention to it and let it do its thing. I think this gets to a more abstract point about, you know, the gap between what policymakers and regulators know and what industry is actually doing. You know, for example, this is kind of a different point, but software-defined networking is not something that the government itself currently uses. And it has thousands of data centers. It has, you know, about 2,000 data centers that they're trying to consolidate. But, you know, software-defined networking is definitely something that they should be using because of all the sensitive data about us that they manage and that they have and that they haven't proven adequate at securing.
Yeah, like the IRS or the Office of Personnel Management over 20 million federal employees had sensitive information hacked by presumably the Chinese. That's the rumor anyway. Right. So certainly if, as you say, software-defined networking has benefits for cybersecurity, the government needs to get its shit together on cybersecurity and they should start with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that they should be using. And it's, I think there's a lot that regulators can learn from industry. There's a lot that industry has to teach regulators and policymakers and people who work in the government. It's really important to catch people up. It's really important to bring people on board, to talk in a language that people understand. But regulators also have to be willing to listen and to learn. And I think, I mean, that's going to be crucial as things just start improving and moving faster and faster. You need to be able to listen and learn.
Well, they can start by listening to this podcast because you did a good job of putting this into real world examples. And I think if the engineering stuff's really complicated, thinking about it as roads and the systems that we have and city planning and things like that, that's a great way of conceptualizing it. And lawmakers might be more open to embracing this if they think about it as having smart infrastructure. And thinking about it with the transportation analogy is definitely very helpful.
Yeah. And I do want to thank Shane Tews, who's a visiting fellow at AEI, for patiently explaining lots of this to me. So thank you, Shane.
Shane, we love Shane. And we're happy to have her on the show anytime. And we're happy to have you on. So thank you for joining me. My guest has been Evelyn Smith, a research associate at the American Enterprise Institute. And she's got a great blog on this on her Medium page, which we will link to in the show notes. But thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Evan.
Let us know what you think of today's episode or other episodes at our Twitter page on Tech Freedom or our Facebook page, facebook.com/techfreedom. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. We love to hear from you, the listener, what you like to hear on the show. If there are topics you want covered, guests you want to see, questions you want answered, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.